The House Transportation Committee will come to order. Welcome, everybody. Today we have three bills, and I think we can get too much of them done. We're still waiting on fiscals on one and, or two of them. So I'm going to go ahead and open a public hearing on House Bill 2553. And Patrick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2553 requires the Department of Transportation to remove or cause to be removed any vehicle, cargo, or debris from state highway after a motor vehicle accident in which a person 18 years of age or younger was killed. You have attached to the back of the staff measure summary before you the Dash 2 amendment. That amendment was prepared by the Department of Transportation. I believe they are here to speak to that amendment. When it's their turn up.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Committee. My name is Scott Bruin. I represent House District 37, the Oregon Legislature, and I am here today with a constituent of mine, Mr. Bill Sawyer, and his daughter, Vanessa, who's back there. That's Vanessa. This bill in front of you, the genesis of this bill happened about, last summer, I guess, is one original contact when Mr. Sawyer contacted our office and described to me in our office truly a heartbreaking situation. And I won't go into too much detail on that. I'll let Mr. Sawyer tell you what he would like to tell you. But long story short, Mr. Sawyer's son and a friend of his son were killed in a really horrific auto accident in November of 2007. Situation where lots of damage, lots of debris. The family, as you can imagine, the pain and suffering that a family would go through with the loss of a child. That was certainly the case in this situation as well. So the family does everything. The car was insured. The child was insured. The family does everything they need to do through the mourning process. When it was all said and done, to make a long story short, the family ends up getting a bill on several fronts, but ultimately a bill for a few thousand dollars at the end of this, even because the insurance was exhausted at the end of the day, and there was a pretty substantial roadside car debris cleanup. The family gets a large bill at the end of this, and after all the heartache and all the time for healing, and months go by, and then at the end of it, still not said and done. Their family came to my office and said, you know, it just doesn't quite seem right, and I couldn't agree more. It just doesn't quite seem right. And so what this bill does, Madam Chair, is basically say that in a situation where a child, 18 years or younger, is in a roadside fatality, and every other means is exhausted, including insurance, that at the end of the day, the family's not going to get a bill for whatever sort of leftover costs. And we've had some discussion with ODOT. Obviously, there's a potential cost involved. We had some discussions with ODOT on how we get this done and minimize the cost. They've come back with the Dash 2 amendments, which I hope you have at this point, once again, they believe that this will, and I think we're still out to get a fiscal. I'm sort of convinced it will be indeterminate, but they say that this gets them to where they need to be. It sends a message out, and once again, this is not a retroactive bill. The Sawyers, though, just don't want to see another family basically have to go through the same situation that they've gone through, and so I was delighted to sponsor this bill and to work through it. And with that, I'll leave that and let Mr. Sawyer sort of discuss how he came to me in the larger situation. So,
thank you for having me, Madam Chair, and the committee. Thanks for allowing me to testify, and having my daughter here means a lot. Pardon me?
Introduce yourself.
Oh, I'm a Bill Sawyer. I'm a father of Daniel Sawyer. This is his senior picture here. It's taken 2 weeks before his fatal accident.
You have a cell phone on. Please shut it off.
Fatal accident, which occurred on November 17th of 2007. My son and his best friend, Tom, who is also, they're both seniors of West Lynn High School, were on their way to their, my son's grandma and his mother's house for Thanksgiving. I've been a single parent since my kids were very young. And 15 miles north of Klamath Falls, for a reason we'll never know, my son veered out of lane. When he corrected, they went head-on into a semi-truck north of Klamath Falls at 60-plus miles an hour. To say the least, the accident scene, from what I understand from my conversations with state police, the tow truck drivers, and those that responded, was a pretty horrific scene in terms of the wreckage and everything else they had to take care of. my phone calls, of course, the parents' worst nightmare, and the nightmare continued for months and months, and we're still processing a lot of that. Unfortunately, too many families experience these kind of things, and with the holidays, everything was just, a lot of it I was in shock during, but I had to take care of everything. I had to fly to Klamath Falls, take care of my son, buy a casket, buy his last pair of clothes he'd be buried in, have him transported from there via Amtrak to the funeral home in Portland, arrange for cemetery services, attend high school memorials. As you can imagine, seniors in high school losing two very popular kids was a horrendous experience for everyone involved, but I had to maintain my strength for my daughter, my family, and for my son's benefit for his burial. Cemetery services, picking out his burial site, having family come in from all over the country. It's something no parent should have to experience. The aggravating factor, which led to myself contacting Representative Bruhn, and I'm highly appreciative of his responsiveness to this. I'd written an email initially talking about the situation, but what happened was the day after my son was buried, I got a phone call from the Chiloquin Towing Company indicating he was graphically describing the accident scene and the amount of effort they had to put out to clean it up in terms of personnel costs, the number of road flares they had to use, the amount of hours and time, which is like a day and a half to clean up the scene. And it came down to they wanted a pretty substantial amount of money. And to be kicked down further when you're in that state of mind was something I really couldn't deal with at that time, so I just asked them to send me a bill, and I was dealing with insurance companies. My son hit a semi-truck, which was $75,000 worth of damage. There was a fatality from his best friend. All of his insurance that he had was expended, and as a single parent working for the government, I just couldn't afford full coverage for myself and two teenagers. So when his vehicle was only worth $4,000, the coverage was fairly limited, the liability comp insurance. That was expended, but I asked him just to send me the bill so I can kind of process this, which he later did with another letter that graphically described the scene and what they had to do to clean it up. Shortly after that, I received a bill for $2,800 from the Chiloquin Volunteer Fire Department for the use of the Jaws of Life, their personnel costs, and so forth. I was being charged by the fire department for their response, and as a former firefighter for 10 years, that kind of hit me personally hard that I'd be charged like that. But once again, I sent that off to the insurance companies. I was able to process things a little better because I couldn't work for a number of months and so forth. It was setting in. It just didn't feel right, first of all, that families had to experience that they would be called out of the blue from a company where I assumed ODOT would be covering these kind of expenses, that they would respond, that they would be doing road cleanup. The state police called in the tow company. Aren't they under contract where they would be paid for to do this? So it just didn't feel right, and even the state policeman who I've been in contact with since the accident was shocked that a family would be charged for that with an 18 and 17-year-old involved, both fatalities, and that the families would be burdened with this extra, the amount of money is what it is. I think it was $3,200, but just the premise of it didn't feel right, so that's when I contacted Representative Bruhn, and like I said, him and his staff have been highly responsive, and I've been making payments to the tow company, and the fire department was taken care of, and I just want to make sure other families who experience this horrific event, and unfortunately many families will, won't have to be hit with this extra burden. And when I did contact ODOT, they were less than sympathetic. And I said, well, it looked like it was your son's fault. You guys are responsible for paying it, and my son was at fault. He was when they initiated the accident. Luckily, the semi-truck driver he hit wasn't physically injured, but he was injured in a way where he probably won't ever drive again because of post-traumatic stress. And I did go to meet him personally to help him through that as well. But their response wasn't what I expected it to be. And I just want to make sure other families don't have to experience this kind of extra hardship on top of everything else that is a lifelong process. So thanks for having me come in to talk, and I appreciate your consideration in the matter.
Thank you, Representative Bruhn.
Let me just a couple concluding points. Just to make clear, this is not a retroactive bill. So Bill and his family will not stand to financially benefit from this bill. But once again, just serves as a great I guess a tribute to future parents who may be in this horrific situation. That through this horrible accident, at least we're not going to be, you know, families like Bill's aren't going to get these bills in the mail following an event like this. I also want to point out, and Bill mentioned it, but we had sort of longer dialogue with this on the phone and via email that, it's a real tribute to Bill and the sort of family for what Bill did with the truck driver who was driving the truck that his son and his son's friend hit. A very traumatic situation, and with all the grief that Bill and his family are going through, went out of, you know, took the time and the effort and drove the miles to go talk with the truck driver and to try, because truly was in shock and I think remains in a difficult situation. But with all the hurt and the pain that his family go through, do the servant thing and go try to help others. So I just think this would be a good tribute to their son, and I think it's something the state, because it is where this law would be invoked is going to be a rare thing, thankfully, a very rare thing. But when it does happen, if it does happen in the future, I think that to have those Oregon families avoid the situation that Daniel's family has had to endure would be good policy. Thank you.
Questions from the committee? Representative Boone.
Well, thank you, and I'm very sorry for your loss, too. And I just wanted to bring a little perspective from a volunteer firefighter. In our district, we're all volunteer, too, and we do bill, but it seems to me in the case, and I've been on a lot of these terrible scenes, and when there's a fatality, I think that's either waived or it's handled in a much different way. We would never do that. When I first saw this bill and I read about the removing the debris and everything, I realized how important that is, and especially on a route maybe you might travel yourself. And that's something that we pretty much, I can only speak for our department, but I notice other departments in the area who we partner with pretty much take care of that. And the tow, if the police do handle the tow, they're on a... They don't pay for it, but they call them, and they're on a call basis, so this one doesn't get called all the time, and they trade off. And so however they bill is how that's done. We don't have anything to do with that, nor do the police. But in the case of someone who getting the car out of the middle of a road or something like that, to if let's just say if it's not a fatality and there's not a reason to close the road, they will sometimes just... The fire truck will push it off to the side if it's not a crime scene or anything like that. And then if that's our responsibility, something happens to it in that process. But we've been very lucky in our area, and I don't know where this was. I'm sorry I missed the first part of your testimony. But different parts, I think different areas might have different policies. And as far as charging for the time spent and the services rendered, some do, and they all, obviously, in a fatality, you don't get that charge, but it's mostly for packaging them up for the ambulance to take them into the hospital or fly them out, however we have to package them. And so it's and there's a bill up in the next room at 3:00 that I'm going to be fighting for to get some money for these supplies, because they just have to be borrowed and given to us from the ambulance service. So. And it's to buy the equipment in order, like the JAWS, and that's the same thing this program I'm talking about. So you should stick around for 3:00. But I'm very sorry. We rarely see people afterwards, so it's real hard for me to sit there and look at that picture.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah, Chair, there was one thing I wanted to add, and it was 15 miles north of Klamath Falls on Highway 97, which is fairly rural right along the Klamath Lake there. Well, there's been a lot of accidents, actually, but... Another perspective is this was from the tow truck driver, because he didn't like having to call me. He didn't like having to graphically describe everything and to bill me like that. He said in other states that a person like him would have been reimbursed automatically through some kind of funding. I'm not an expert in that, but he is totally for this type of bill where he wouldn't have to touch families. He felt horrible about doing that. He didn't realize it was a day after my son was buried, first of all, and he didn't want to have to do that, period. And he already knew the insurance was going to be expended somehow, so he felt that was only his other recourse to get the funds was to contact me. So
I just wanted to add that he is supportive, when I've spoken with him numerous times, of this bill.
And follow up. I just wanted to piggyback on what you said, and we have discussed that in our at our drills, at usually our debriefing after a bad call like that, where how can we do that? And that's exactly right. Either we don't go directly to the family, but maybe a different route, and maybe there's a fund somewhere, or via the insurance companies or something, so that you don't have to be the contact person.
Yeah, great. So. Thank you.
Representative Widener.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I find it understandable with the tow truck operator calling because he did have expenses, but I find it inexcusable for the fire department and ODOT to be calling you about this. And I'm just wondering how forceful they were when they called you, or were they sympathetic? Mm-hmm. How did they treat you when they called?
Well, the fire department sent me a bill. It was through the mail. So they didn't call me. They sent me a bill, and I received that bill prior to the tow truck bill, actually. It was something I moved on to the insurance company. ODOT is something I called them. They didn't call me at all. I had no communication with ODOT. I was just told by the tow company, ODOT doesn't cover that. They didn't respond to that. And when I called ODOT asking questions, I called them to ask them if I could put a marker for where the accident was and what the laws were about leaving road markers. And I brought up the conversation, do you respond to accidents like this? Do you take care of cleanup? And so forth, and then he kind of replied, "Where no, it sounds like it was your son's accident, and you're responsible for those payments and that." So I initiated the conversation with ODOT.
Okay.
They never did contact me.
Thank you. Representative,
answer a piece of that. I believe, I don't know if ODOT's in the room, but I believe they will be part of it if it involves an animal. Of the state, like a deer or an elk or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Not a domestic animal, but a wild animal. But I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
Well, okay.
I just saying, I'm from California originally. I don't admit that too often, but in public settings.
We'll
but
forgive you.
It's just Caltrans, it's automatic. They would respond to an accident scene like that, no matter what the cause. And that they do reimburse tow companies, and so I guess that is state to state. So that's another reason I think I was shocked at how this played out. Because I am born and raised in California, and you know, I've had friends in accidents, and there was nothing like this was experienced with the aftermath, with the financial piece. So.
Right, I'll follow up just briefly. ODOT does have what they call the hazard truck, especially when there's a closure, and the guy is amazing. He's, like, cloned all over the county.
Mm-hmm.
They will put out flares. The state police will put out flares, mm-hmm. and they'll take care of a lot of the traffic control if it's a bad scene. So
okay.
they do, if they're, I think it's if they're nearby,
okay.
as soon as they can get there.
Okay.
So very sorry about what happened.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank
Appreciate
you, Madam
it.
Chair. Thank you, committee.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
Amy.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation. Thank you for allowing us to testify on this bill, and we're passing out a little bit of written testimony. I first want to express my sincere condolences to the Sawyer family for their loss. And I also want to thank Representative Bruin and his staff for working with us on crafting an amendment that would achieve the goals of the original bill, but allow some allowances for the department. The bill as originally drafted removed personal liability for costs of the cleanup of an accident scene on a state highway in the circumstances you've heard about. And the bill as drafted would make ODOT responsible for the removal of that vehicle or the vehicles that were damaged or destroyed in the accident, as well as the cleanup. The Dash 2 amendment makes two primary changes. The first is that it removes that responsibility of ODOT to do the actual cleanup and removal of the vehicles at the scene. Now, the reason for that is that on a state highway where there is a fatal accident, the district attorney and the medical examiner are actually the officials who have jurisdiction or control over that scene. And typically, their agent is the Oregon State Police. So while ODOT typically will arrive at a scene, we are primarily traffic control. Oregon State Patrol is in control of that scene and has jurisdiction over what happens there. And they've told me that typically what they will do after they've conducted investigation right there at the scene is they will call for a private tow company who then takes away the vehicles to a secure location. Frequently, they will continue their investigation using those vehicles away from the scene. So what we didn't want was to have this bill put ODOT in charge of taking away those vehicles when, in fact, OSP typically wants those vehicles to continue their investigation. So that's one primary change. The other primary change is to allow for the private tow company to at least pursue any available insurance. As the bill was originally drafted, I'm sure it was just a mistake, but it essentially just said ODOT will pay, and there was no opportunity for anyone to pursue any kind of private insurance carrier. So that's a second change. So, in summary, the Dash 2 amendment maintains the primary goal of the bill, that parents and families will not be saddled with this kind of a bill for the towing and the cleanup, but does allow the Oregon State Police to remain in control of the scene and for private tow companies to pursue insurance.
Questions? Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Joyce, I see in the Dash 2 amendment that there's a reference to reasonable costs. There's no statutory reference here, so is it your understanding that, that ODOT will be allowed then to determine what constitutes a reasonable cost?
Chair Beyer, Representative Edwards, my understanding would be that the, for instance, I think the typical case this is going to happen is if a private tow company would submit a bill to the department, and the tow company and the department would work out what the if the department for some reason deemed the bill to be unreasonable, we would work that out.
Follow up.
So the amount isn't an issue in this case. In other words, it could be in any amount provided the department assumes that the negotiated cost the department pays to the towing company is reasonable.
Chair Beyer, Representative Edwards, I think it's a typical standard in civil law. It's a reasonableness standard. If it's reasonable, it is. I don't think the department would be in the business of negotiating over nickels and dimes.
Okay. Thanks, Madam Chair. I just wanted to verify that the department wouldn't be in a position of establishing a somewhat arbitrary standard.
Right. Representative Vance.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the family, of course, has my condolences. But I need to ask, the allocation of responsibility for a parent for a child under 18 is a long-lasting arrangement, if I recall correctly. Am I recalling correctly that those of us who are parents, since I have a 17-year-old and a 15-year-old, am I not responsible for them under the law? In the normal course of events.
Chair Beyer, Representative Bentz, it's been a while since I've actively practiced law. I will say that my understanding is that's the arrangement under the law typically, and this bill would create essentially an exception.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Yes.
The situation, if I recall correctly, from some lawsuits involving school children, usually the pressure was on the parent to carry the insurance. So if we chose to adopt this approach, we would indeed be making an exception to that normal situation. I'm just trying to figure out what the shift here is. Is it from the parent and the purpose of buying insurance to cover those risks that the family incurs, and we're picking up this one piece of risk and placing it with the state? Is that what we're doing?
Representative Beyer and Representative Bentz, I don't think it alleviates any responsibility for a parent to carry insurance on a vehicle or to properly insure their vehicle when they've got a child driving it. I'm getting a little outside of my area of expertise, but I think this is that the contemplation here is a very narrow set of circumstances. This fact pattern does not happen often at all. and then to have a situation where insurance either is non-existent or exhausted, I think you're going to even lessen. So I don't think there's an intent here to create some kind of broad exception to the duty to get in proper insurance.
Yes, I understood it that way. I was just trying to set the framework for what would be normal. In the normal course of events, one's insurance would take care of the matter. If that's inadequate, then this bill would come into play, because I think that's the way there's no insurance available would suggest that that which had been available had been exhausted.
Chair Beyer and Representative Benz, I think it contemplates a couple of situations in where the insurance is exhausted or where there was no insurance, which certainly we're aware that some folks don't carry insurance. So in either situation or for any reason, if there isn't insurance available.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay.
Thank you.
And we don't have the requisite paperwork to go with this bill, so we won't be able to move it today. And so I'm going to close the public hearing, and we'll see that up again. Thank you. And we'll go ahead and open a public hearing on... Oh, I'm sorry. A work session on 3235. Patrick, remind us.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 3253 is the measure that we heard last Wednesday. It establishes a tax credit for plug-in electric drive motor vehicles. Would apply to tax years beginning on or after January 1st, 2010. In your packet, and I believe Representative Nathanson is here to speak to those, you have three amendments. The dash 2 replaces the scale of maximum allowable tax credit with a flat maximum of $5,000 per vehicle. The dash 3 specifies the tax credit can be claimed on up to five vehicles that are applicable and adds applicability requirement that the vehicle have maximum speed of at least 35 miles per hour. Makes it applicable to three-wheeled vehicles that otherwise would qualify under every other provision of the measure. The dash 4 amendment makes the tax credit applicable to tax years beginning on or after January 1st, 2016.
Thank you. And Representative Nathanson. And committee, it would be my intent with this bill to move it to revenue where they're having all these discussions about tax credits. So,
thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Nancy Nathanson, representative from District 13. The reason the amendments are before you are to clarify the intent of the bill from the time of the first writing. As you all are familiar, bill drafting is an intense period of time. They move very fast down there, and to be sure that the bill that you have to consider matched the intent, the first set of amendments are to ensure that this would indeed cover the kind of vehicles that are being manufactured in Oregon now, that are under development for manufacture. Some of them are three-wheel, some are four-wheel. Some of them drive different speeds, and given current definitions of what is highway ready, what's appropriate for highway use versus urban use and so forth, I wanted to make sure that the tax credits will be applicable to the various kinds of vehicles that Oregonians may be able to and want to purchase for moving around. So it's to offer flexibility. So that's the purpose of the amendments, to make sure that it applies to three- or four-wheel vehicles, and the purpose of the speed, that it must travel at least 35 miles an hour, so it wouldn't apply to some sort of a little scooter, for example. There's another bill that is in...
I think we have a question.
Oh, no, ma'am. Madam Chair, I'll wait for the
line. Okay. Go ahead.
And there is another amendment in response to an interest to be certain that this has a sunset date.
Now I'm ready.
Now you're ready. Sorry.
And, Madam Chair, do you want a motion, or you have a motion prepared over there by somebody? Or?
I think we have someone willing to make a motion over here.
Yeah, we're just trying to get to the bottom of exactly what that is, Madam Chair.
Oh, that's true. We probably need to talk about all the rest of the amendments that you have in front of us, and because there is one of them that we do not have the proper paperwork on. And
Madam Chair, just to offer, it appears that I think we could move the twos and the threes and then send this over to revenue, and that item four, could the dash fours, could be then dealt with there if that's appropriate. And that seems to be more of a revenue issue anyway, since it sets time frame in the sunset, which would probably be part of the revenue discussion. Rep. Bailey has a question.
Yes, Representative.
Can I get a comment in, though, too?
Yeah.
I spoke to the nice young man from Eugene, and the one company, I asked them, do they pay family wages with benefits? And they do, and their family members get health care benefits, too. So this is all good, Madam Chair. It's one more green vote from the good Happy Valley representative, too. So.
Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To represent Call's point on the dash fours, a couple of points. One, I'm looking at the SMS on the front. It says effective committee amendment makes tax credit applicable to tax years beginning on or after January 1st, 2016. I assume in reading the dash fours, I think my understanding is that it actually means to say beginning after 2010 and sunsetting in 2016.
Yes.
Is that a correct reading?
Yes.
Okay.
It does it.
Madam Chair, may I also say that I really appreciate an amendment that puts a sunset in here. And I do think it's something that we can cover in revenue, especially given that we're attempting to categorize some of these according to subject area. And so we may want to, if possible, put a different sunset that conforms with some of the other tax credits so that it's categorized appropriately.
Yes.
And Madam Chair, if I may ask a follow-up question. Representative Nathanson, I wonder if you could address a little bit about some of your efforts related to other bills to make sure that this pulls technology forward and offsets some of the costs of this bill.
Yes. Madam Chair and Representative Bailey, thank you. I have been talking with various people about the condition of the market for hybrid vehicles and the tax credits that have been in place for hybrids and the need to encourage new technology and new uses, and where a market the manufacturer and consumer choices seem to be well in place, perhaps those kinds of tax credits aren't as necessary anymore. So I have initiated the work with legislative counsel to prepare an amendment that would phase out the use of the credit for hybrid vehicles in essence to make room for encouraging this new kind of a market and new jobs in Oregon. This bill has a very narrow relating to clause, so it's not possible to address it with this bill, so the amendments are going to be prepared for another bill that is being heard, the Betsy bill, in revenue. So that way these things can be synchronized, if you will.
Thank you. Representative Widener.
Yeah. Madam Chair, on this here, I mean, I'm in favor of tax credits, but it's limited into a couple businesses. And one of the things I think we really should be looking at for helping some of these companies getting off the ground are capital investment tax credits to encourage all businesses, not just singling one business out or two businesses out, but helping all businesses come to Oregon, because we're competing in a nationwide market for businesses. And I think that would be a better way to go about this whole process. That way they could get tooled up and manufacture these in a much more efficient manner.
Thank you. And I certainly would encourage you to share your thoughts with the Revenue Committee, of which I think we have a quite a number of them sitting in this room.
You almost have a majority of the votes, Madam Chair.
Yes. And
I will have a bill for them.
Oh, okay.
Great. Look forward to seeing it.
And Representative Call.
Yeah, Madam Chair, if I might, I'd like to move the dash two amendments to House Bill 3253.
Representative Call has moved the dash two amendments to House Bill 3253. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, the amendments are adopted.
Madam Chair, I move the dash three amendments to House Bill 3253.
Representative Call has moved the dash three amendments to House Bill 3253. Any discussion? Any? As my script all leaves my head, any objections? Seeing none, we have adopted the dash three amendments. Representative Call.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3253 to the floor with subsequent referral to revenue by prior reference.
Thank you. And it has House Bill 3253 as amended has been moved to the floor with a subsequent referral to revenue. Recommended.
He didn't say
without recommendation.
Sorry.
Yes.
Yeah.
Any discussion?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Why don't we have a due pass recommendation? Is there a reason?
Because I think a unanimous vote down to the Revenue Committee probably would be preferable.
Very good. I thank you, Madam Chair.
Given that, any clerk, would you call the roll? The clerk, I'm moving to the floor today.
Representative Bailey.
Aye.
Representative
Bent.
Aye.
Representative Berger. Aye. Representative Boone. Aye. Representative Edwards.
Aye.
Representative
Shoffler.
Aye.
Representative Wagner.
Aye.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Call.
Aye.
Chair Beyer.
Aye. House Bill 3253 is received the requisite number of votes, and we'll move on to revenue and have fun with it, you guys. I have been stumbling all week, so hopefully it gets better.
How do you look good, Madam Chair?
3253, I've closed the work session on 3253. House Bill 3047, we do not have the right paperwork, and I don't think there's anyone in the room that wants to address that today, so we'll carry that over till Friday.
Yes, Madam Chair, it's already scheduled for Friday.
Thank you, and with that, we've finished our business, and we are adjourned.
I had several questions.